Come on, who's that sending you text messages? Got a podcast to record here.
That's Dave from Coventry. You know Dave, who listens all the time to the show. Check that out. He's been on the Manscaped. He's gone a bit close to the bone with that little bad boy, hasn't he?
Jeez. Wait, and who's that?
That's Jed from Newcastle. Look at the growler on that. Blooming heck. Before and after. Jeez. He's got a before and after on that one. Check that out.
Oh, you're taking a piss now. Not another one.
No, no, no. This is Terry from your neck of the woods, Liverpool. Look at that shaft. Absolutely sparkling.
Wait, what's going on? You do realise... Wait, does your wife even know that you've got grown men sending you dick pics?
Manscaped.com is the website that you want to visit if you need a little bit of a trim downstairs. Use the code FIGHT20 to get yourself a nice 20% discount. And... a little bit of an added bonus is that I'm accepting DMs from everybody.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 488. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts. It's mainly UFC, but there's a bit of Bellator chat coming up as well throughout the course of the show. So thank you very much for joining us. If it is the first time you've decided to join us, please subscribe to us. You can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you are looking for. And you can get us on our website as well, fightdisciples.com. Loads of stuff on there, including all the Android feeds. Our YouTube link is there as well, where we're putting up more content. So please subscribe to us on YouTube too. And you can also have access to the shop, where I'm led to believe there's more merchandise coming our way in the not-too-distant future. That he's been out there. Vivian Westwood's been out there designing, haven't you, mate?
Tees, hoodies, socks, you name it. We have got the summer collection, the summer 2021 collection. Or I was thinking about calling it the post-COVID collection. Will be released very, very soon. We might even have some sneak peek pics coming up later this week. But yeah, man, a bunch of T-shirt designs, a couple of different sock designs, and obviously a new classic hoodie design as well. So roll on summer, man.
Filthy. Lots to talk about from the weekend. Is Robert Whittaker... go on.
Well, before we jump into that, can we just make it clear? Because... if you follow any of the leading MMA websites, so you get your information from MMA Fighting or MMA Junkie, probably the two market leaders, blah, blah, blah. You're probably expecting us to do nothing but talk about Jake Paul and Ben Askren on this show because they shamelessly jumped all over that boxing match, boxing match.
Yeah.
And both their websites, if you look at them, completely and utterly went to town, dominated. Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum didn't happen. It was a side note. According to MMA websites, the main UFC event was a side note compared to their coverage, their unrelenting coverage of that thriller boxing match. Absolutely bonkers. If you've come here for your fix of that, we've done it on the boxing show.
Yes.
Because that's where it should go. It was a boxing event and it's on a boxing show, not on the MMA show. Shame on you, Junkie and MMA Fighting. Fuck me. They went to town on that boxer match. And it surprised me, man. Surprised me.
Yeah, there won't be any. None of that. We've done it once, mate. I'm not doing it again. It's like you said, boxing conversation on the boxing show, MMA conversation on the MMA show. I watched Robert Whittaker at the weekend with my mouth wide open, mate. Absolutely wide open. Now, I was lucky enough to speak to both of the guys in the main event last week for BT Sport, interviewed them both. And I was incredibly impressed with both guys as I left the conversation. I knew that Robert Whittaker would be in the right frame of mind because I've spoken to him on several occasions since he's made those changes in his life. He's in a far better headspace now. He's had wonderful performances recently. And I knew that he'd be cool, calm and collected. He's always cool, calm and collected. We spent time around him during fight week. He's probably the most relaxed fighter that you're ever likely to come across during a fight week. Kelvin Gastelum, I had a few questions about because obviously he got to the highest of highs fighting Israel Adesanya. And he lost that narrowly. Last round, he goes in there and Israel Adesanya's massive set of nuts, gets him through that fight, and he ends up winning it, on my card anyway, 3-2, and becomes the interim champion then, and obviously went on to unify that division, didn't he? But from the back of that, Kelvin Gastelum's been on a bit of a slide, and he hasn't looked the same guy. How much did that fight take out of him? Now, last time out against Ian Heinisch, I thought he looked better, much better. He looked like he was much better on it. So having a conversation with him last week about employing a mind coach and a confidence coach and a guy that is working on the mental side of mixed martial arts with him made me come away from that thinking, this guy's on, man. This guy's back in the game. You know what I mean? He's moving back in the right direction. Now, we're obviously going to wax lyrical about how good Robert Whittaker was. Now, recent times will kind of maybe create a false narrative on where Kelvin Gastelum's at and the level of the performance that Robert Whittaker then gets off the back of that fight with Kelvin Gastelum. I want to basically say now, before we go into this conversation, that I thought Kelvin Gastelum was brilliant. I thought that he brought his A game. I thought at times there, you could see that he was mentally switched on. He was doing all the things that he was supposed to be doing. He just ran into a guy that he's probably even better now than he was when he was the bloody champion. Robert Whittaker, man, was unreal. Absolutely unreal. And the fight that we all have to see in the middleweight division now is him against Izzy Part 2. We have to see it. Yes. We need to see that fight because Whittaker was sensational at the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And Adesanya's coming into the fight now on the back of a defeat. We've never seen him come into a fight on the back of a defeat before. We've never seen how he's going to react. What's it done to his confidence? You know, has it impacted on the way he competes, the as relaxed as he is in there? We just don't know. Those questions need to be answered. And I think for the first time now, there's those questions about Adesanya. There's also now a reaffirmation of Robert Whittaker as potentially being the best middleweight in the world. He was absolutely faultless at the weekend. You know, I thought he was very good against Till, don't get me wrong. You know, I thought that was a really close fight, but there was times in there he was so intelligent. Obviously, he was outstanding against Cannonier as well on Fight Island. He was very good. But here against a rejuvenated Kelvin Gastelum. And Kelvin Gastelum, for me, who seems to be in the best place of his career as well. A guy that had nothing to lose and everything to gain is incredibly dangerous. Incredibly dangerous. And Robert Whittaker dealt with him in such an intelligent manner. At no point did he play Gastelum's game. At no point did he leave the door open. Did he throw a lazy shot? Everything was calculated. Every second of every round, Whittaker was switched on.
Whether it was leg kicks, whether it was his high kicks,
he just mixed it through his entire repertoire.
Oh, man.
Faultless, man. There's times there when he's just like so in the groove, so much rhythm to his fighting. You're like, fuck me, that's if you could put that in a bottle.
Yeah.
You could sell that and be a multi-millionaire. He was absolutely bob on.
So fast. Like you just said, that flow that he was in from the way that he was mixing up use of his hands into the use of the high kick, use of the kicks. Then every now and again, he'd just go, I'm going to give you something else to think about now, Sunshine. I'm going to take you down.
Exactly.
Boom, there you go. Have a look at that. And you're thinking, what is this? This is next level shit. Now, we've been high on Whittaker for a long time. He became champion at a young age. We keep forgetting. He's just turned 30, dude. He feels like he's been around here forever, doesn't he? He's just turned 30. This guy is now in the prime of his career. He was the champion pre-prime. He ran into Israel Adesanya at a time, and I don't want to take anything away from Izzy because we love the dude. I think he's absolutely unbelievable. But he ran into a time fighting Israel Adesanya where his head wasn't right. He wasn't in the right frame of mind to be taking on a fight of that magnitude. He was burnt out. The guy had overcooked everything and overthought everything compared to mixed martial arts in his career. And that defeat to Israel Adesanya was a good thing for Robert Whittaker. It was a good thing for him professionally and personally as well. I think it sorted a lot of things out for him and put into perspective and into a place where MMA sits in his life. And we've seen that over the last year to 18 months. The development of him as a guy, the development of him personally, but also the development of him as a mixed martial artist. He looks like he's enjoying it again now. Now, please, if you're listening to this and you're thinking these lads are going crazy now, thinking that Robert Whittaker's going to go in there and beat Israel Adesanya, I, for one, am not saying that. I am not saying that Robert Whittaker is going to go and beat Israel Adesanya. What I am going to go and say, though, is that Robert Whittaker gives himself a better account this time, and he's in a better state this time to take on Israel Adesanya. And I think we as fans get a better fight. Last time we got a clinic from Izzy. We got a sensational performance from Izzy, didn't we? We got a coming out performance where it's like, oh my days, Israel Adesanya, look at this guy. This time, we might just get the best middleweight fight of all time. That's where Robert Whittaker's at right now.
Yeah, and I think the manner in which, as you say, we were talking in the build-up last week about the fact that Vettori missed the boat. He missed an opportunity to draw a line in the sand and go, I deserve the next shot, man. He beat me on a split decision last time. I deserve the rematch. I've just smashed Kevin Holland to bits. Put me in for the title. He didn't do that. He fought safety first. Mm. He realised there was a comfortable way he could beat Kevin Holland, that it certainly wasn't on his feet. And he opted to protect that W and to put safety first. While Robert Whittaker didn't take any risks this weekend, he didn't need to, because he was putting on a clinic. He was putting on a clinic against Kelvin Gastelum, who was absolutely game as a badger. And yet, there's nothing he could do. He couldn't break into the resolve of Robert Whittaker. I could have watched Robert Whittaker fight for 15 rounds at the weekend.
Same.
I could have quite happily gone, right, get Gastelum out now, put someone else in, get Vettori in. And he'd have probably carried on in that flow state against Vettori and done exactly the same thing to him, because he was just, boom, absolutely on. I want this Robert Whittaker against Israel Adesanya. I want to see that guy compete against Israel Adesanya, because they're right, chalk and cheese to where he was last time mentally, chalk and cheese to where he was in terms of the career burnout and how he felt about MMA and the impact it was having on his personal life. Seems to have got all that sorted now. He's fighting on his terms. He's fighting because he loves it. And we've seen him in Fight Island after he beat Cannonier. Completely professional. Does a number on Cannonier in a very similar fashion to this. And then that night, he's in the bar. He's rapping along to Eminem. He's having a couple of drinks. He's celebrating. You can see a guy that's in good headspace. You can see a guy that is very much comfortable in his own skin and absolutely realizing his potential. Him against Adesanya is a massive, massive fight, especially for Australasia back end of this year. I think it's inevitable. We've got to see it. I think Adesanya can't deny the fact that Robert Whittaker is head and shoulders the number one contender guy and the biggest fight out there for him. And I just think, perfect narrative. You've got one guy who's never been as good as he is now, and the incredible champion, the poster boy, coming off a loss. Perfect. Perfect. What a narrative. Can't wait. Mate.
Unbelievable. He was. There's nothing more that we can say about it. He was absolutely sensational in that main event. And fingers crossed we get it. And I think we will.
Yeah.
Dana knows. I'm sure Izzy will come round to thinking when.
Listen,
they stick
I might get some stick here. I might get some stick here because Kamaru Usman came through a one-sided performance against Masvidal. Obviously, we're going to talk about the second fight in a minute. But in the first fight, he come through comfortably against Masvidal, won every round, and I was all over him. I was like, it's not good enough. You missed an opportunity. The difference here is, yes, Kelvin Gastelum coming at late notice, but Robert Whittaker was putting on a clinic. Kamaru Usman was holding Masvidal, who came in at 5 days' notice, up against the fence, stamping on his feet for large portions of that fight. You know, it was one-dimensional stuff. It was boring. I couldn't wait for the 5 rounds to end so I could just go, just give him the fucking belt back. Guys, next. This was different. I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, fuck, it's nearly the end of the 5th round. Fuck's sake. I want to see more. I want to see more of Robert Whittaker in this position, in this zone, because I'm enjoying it. Mm. You're seeing an artist, like watching an artist paint a picture, man. It was absolutely excellent. And I think for me, it already rivals Max Holloway's performance from earlier in the year.
January.
For being the performance of the year so far. Max Holloway was amazing against Calvin Kayser. I think Robert Whittaker was amazing against Kelvin Gastelum at the weekend. If you're a martial arts coach, you come away going, we peaked tonight, boys. We peaked tonight. Because that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, man. And I'm glad that it happened because... The card needed it, didn't it? Jesus Christ, man. It was decision after decision after decision. Don't get me wrong, there were some nice little fights in there, but it was like, is somebody going to get knocked out tonight or what, man? Is somebody going over or what? It just wasn't happening. I think we had one in the first fight, we had one in the third fight, and then everything else was just decision, 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 decision. So I'm so glad that Robert came along and he went, don't worry, I've got you. I've got you. If you've stayed up and you're with me, don't worry, I've got you, lads. I've got you. So fair play with me.
I hope someone at the UFC, whether it's Dana, and the fact that he was all over the Mike Tyson show talking about Ben Askren and Jake Paul makes me suspect that somebody might have a vested interest in Triller. But the fact that the UFC card produced so many decisions, and it was arduous to get through at times. It was the ultimate signpost that go and watch what's on Triller instead. It was weird, man. Weird.
Yeah, if you decided to watch the boxing at the weekend, then listen, no, there's no problem with that, because obviously you had Andrade against Williams, and then you had all the craziness of the Triller thing. If you decided to watch that, you come to us on a Monday morning, you think, right, lads will tell me what fights to go and watch. There's only one. Go and watch the main event. Just go and watch Robert Whittaker against Kelvin Gastelum. That's the main one from the UFC card at the weekend. It was sensational. I would have said to you, go and watch Jeremy Stephens against Drakkar Klose. That would have probably been a really, really good fight.
Yes.
But it fell off in the most weird of circumstances. So they had a weigh-in. They weighed in. They both make weight. They both then face off against each other, and Jeremy Stephens pushes Drakkar Klose. Now, we've seen this happen on many, many occasions where they get a little bit, they're fired up, the lads, they've just been cutting weight, they've got a little bit close to each other, one guy overreacts a little bit too much, and it gets a bit heated at the weigh-in. All right, we've seen it plenty of times. What we haven't seen, though, is that we haven't seen that push then result in the fighter being pulled out of the fight because of injury. So I've read the report on the injury of what Drakkar Klose has obviously suffered in the aftermath of that push. And it feels like, the best way I can describe it to people listening, it's like a whiplash. He's received like a whiplash injury, of which has caused, obviously with the weight cut and all that type of stuff, some type of nausea, headaches, migraines, and various things like that. And he's been advised in the aftermath of it to pull out of the fight. Madness. I've never seen anything like that before. It's a very weird, weird situation. Now, you then kind of then start asking, well, that's unfair on Drakkar Klose that he's going to be missing out on X, Y, and Z when it comes to the finances of this fight. It wasn't his fault. He didn't stick his hands on anybody, and the injuries haven't been caused by himself. He was there. He made weight. I haven't seen in the aftermath whether the UFC is still going to pay him or anything like that. What sanctions do you put towards Jeremy Stephens, if any? What do you do in that situation? Because it shouldn't happen. Let's be honest. It was a totally avoidable situation. So what did the UFC do in that situation in order to try and prevent that from happening again?
Yeah, very strange because, as you say, it was a freak accident, a freak injury, sorry. We see guys pushing each other on the scales all the time. We see guys getting a little bit physical and, okay, they don't always push and shove one another, but we've seen instances like this in the past and no one's picked up an injury from it. So it does sound very, very unusual that a whiplash injury from a push would be so dramatic. But, you know, I read all about it, and he had to be locked up in a dark room and everything to try and stop the headaches, and they were giving him all kinds of medication, and he couldn't shake it off, you know. And this guy's a fighter. He's not gonna feign an injury or any bullshit like that, because, one, you ain't getting paid. And two, he knew that this was a co-main event and a brilliant opportunity for him to advance his career. So, I believe him 100% that he did pick up the injury. What the UFC, I don't know, man. It's a weird situation, because do you stop the guys getting physical? Do you stop the guys, you know, basically say you'll be fine 10% your pace if you put your hands on your opponents and stuff like that? Because we touched on it earlier. We spoke about it on the boxing show, that part of the sale is these viral moments. You know, the UFC probably got more hits on that push than anything else from the whole weigh-in. You know, people want controversy. They want spite. They want a bit of needle. So it's going to be interesting to see what if they do anything moving forward. But it was a freak injury. I just hope he can recover quickly enough and they can turn it around and get that matchup, because it was a good co-main event. It was probably the fight on the card that most people were looking forward to.
Yeah.
And hopefully they can be rescued and it can be rescheduled.
Yeah. The rest of the UFC card, there's nothing really to write home about. Bellator happened on Friday night. I'm going to be honest. When they announced the light heavyweight Grand Prix tournament, I was excited. I thought, right, Bellator have got their act together here now. This is going to be wicked. It's going to be really, really good. But as of yet, these quarterfinals are flattered to deceive. There's not been anything really to write home. Look at you straight on there. We've still got Rumble and Romero to come, which yes. I think is the second week of May, I think. But the first three that we've seen, they have been poor. They have been poor. They've not lived up to any of my expectations. I would hope that the semi-final stage is a little bit better, and that the quarter-final stage has just been fighters trying to get through to the semi-finals and what have you. But yeah, it's flattered to deceive, sadly, mate. It's not really caught fire for me as of yet, the light heavyweight Grand Prix.
No, it hasn't at all. And you know, it's kind of been set up to be a bit of a platform for Vadim Nemkov, to the current champion, to make a name for himself on the back of all these former UFC fighters. He's the Bellator's reigning light heavyweight champion. So I kind of get it in a way, but seeing some of these guys go through the motion a little bit hasn't been great. But as you say, hopefully it gets a bit more exciting by the semi-finals. The good thing about the weekend's card is obviously the moment, the fight of the night. The undoubted highlight was our own Paul Daly coming through against Hamasi, getting absolutely fucking shellacked in the first round. And then, as only someone with the power of Paul Daly can do, completely turning the fight around and getting a sensational finish. A highlight reel moment in the career of Paul Daly that is filled with highlight reel moments.
Mate, he was brilliant, man. Like you say, you're watching that first round and you think to yourself, oh, fuck, you don't want Daly to go out like this. What's this all about? And then all of a sudden, he just summoned up some demon from somewhere, didn't he? And then
Not today, motherfucker!
To be fair, at the end of the first round, I thought, what's happening here? This could be a full 360 in the first round. I thought, brilliant. Second round, he stuck it on him and landed that big bomb of a left hand, didn't he? That left hand, man, I don't know what's in it. I don't know what he has in that hand.
Semtex?
Yeah, obvious. Absolutely detonated on the kid and sent him over. Really good. That was the highlight, like you said, from the Bellator show at the weekend. Paul Daly getting the job done. We've got a big UFC 261 and a bit of PFL to preview for you, but a bit of news. If it is news, it's class. They've all been confirmed now. Blachowicz versus Teixeira, UFC 266, good, which is taking place in September, the month before. You're going to get Nunes against Pena at UFC 265. That's in August. And then the month before that, in July, when the fans come back to Las Vegas, part three, baby, Conor versus Dustin at UFC 264. I'm led to believe that tickets went on sale and was sold out in under 5 minutes. All 20,000 gone for the T-Mobile. Wowzers, yeah, man. Wowzers.
Doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me, man, because we've all been desperate for content, haven't we? We've all been desperate to get back inside the T-Mobile, especially. You know, we talk about it all the time, don't we, about getting back to Vegas. You know, that will feel like the world is suddenly back to normal for us in terms of our professional lives. So it doesn't surprise me that every fan has felt exactly the same way, man. Get me to fucking Vegas. Conor McGregor, live in Vegas. We go back inside not the coronavirus small bubble, but the incredibly inflated bubble, the circus that is Conor McGregor. This will be a very different build-up than what we've seen on Fight Island. I think we've already seen a little hint of them going backwards and forwards about the charity money. And I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, man. By the time this fight goes down, by the time we get to July the 8th, July the 9th, final press conference, weigh-in in Vegas, Conor will be back to the old Conor McGregor, you know, fucking Billy walking around the stage, fucking sipping whiskey, the full 9 yards.
Mate, he's been accusing Diaz of steroids this week, man. He's back in that zone. Also, Clarissa Shields makes her PFL debut in June. We'll keep you up to date with that. Now, speaking of the PFL, Friday, mate. Friday. PFL gets underway. So excited about this. Anthony Pettis is at the top of the card against Clay Collard, which will be a great fight. To have Anthony Pettis as part of the PFL is a major, major coup for those guys. So congratulations for getting a name of that magnitude on this card. Also, we've been waiting 12 months, haven't we? It was supposed to happen. This was all supposed to happen last year. They shut down early, did the PFL, but they have brought it back and it is on like Donkey Kong, starting Friday night. Bubba Jenkins taking on Lance Palmer. Lance Palmer is undefeated in the PFL. He's won 10 out of 10 fights. That's 2 million quid in cash bonus checks. Fair play to Lance. He's absolutely bruised and he's back for a third time for this Grand Prix. Taking on Bubba Jenkins. That will be a brilliant fight. That's the first fight on the main card. The first fight of the night for British fight fans, it's our mate Brendan Lochner. He's here, baby. Finally. What is it? 15 months he's been waiting. He's travelled the world. He's been out to Thailand. He's been out to Dubai. He's been out, you name it, he's been there. He's been in all the gyms fighting all the killers. But this is the first time that he gets to do it under the lights. And he's taking on Shaman Marais, a guy that used to be in the UFC, a guy that's fought Sadiq Youssef in the UFC and some other killers as well. Andre Feely, I think he's been in with as well. Top fighter, top level fight. It's the first fight of the night. Brendan getting to throw down, mate. And we've been lucky enough to speak to him recently. There's an interview on our YouTube channel. Go and have a little bit of a nosy at it. He is thirsty, mate. He is thirsty to get in there, to have his hands wrapped and get in. They've gone OTT, haven't they, with the bubble of the PFL. 17 days they've stuck these guys away for. They've locked them away for 17 days in a bubble, not allowed to go anywhere before fight night.
Yeah, and they've had to do it because of the format that it is. You know, they can't afford for one of these fights to fall off because it fucks up everything that they're planning for. You know, that's the threat that you face when you base your promotion around tournament formats. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. Can we watch it on UK TV? Do you know if there's any way?
Oh, Nicholas, how can we watch it? Well, let me tell you how can we watch it. You see that? See what happens there? Normally, I cross them and you put them in the back of the net. But I see what you've done there. You've decided to go for the assist. You've decided to cross one. He said, go on, big man, stick your head on that and get yourself a goal this week. Well, here we go. Done a little bit of a deal. We've been going back and forth with the guys and the broadcast partners here. This is a treat for you Fight Disciples. A little bit of a treat for you. Friday night, I know this is happening obviously on American time zone, so it will be in the early hours of the morning. But on Friday night, early hours of Saturday morning, if you click on Fight Disciples YouTube channel, there will be a live stream of all the fights that the PFL are showing on that particular night. Kicking off with our very own Brendan Lochner against Shaman Marais and finishing with Anthony Pettis against Clay Collard. There you go. I think there's 10 fights. All 10 fights will be live and direct, courtesy of the Fight Disciples. So there you go. You don't need to go anywhere else. Just go to our YouTube channel and it will be there for you. Go and get stuck in.
Boom.
Free as well, mate. Free. I was thinking of putting it behind a paywall. No. I was thinking of putting it behind a paywall and being a proper cunt, but I thought, no, go on. I'll let everybody have it for now. Go on. Get stuck in. Enjoy yourselves and go and watch some fights for now. Job right. So, like I said, that's early hours of Saturday morning, Friday night, UK. All right. Fast forward 24 hours and the fans are back in the arena for UFC 261. We've already done our preview show for BT Sport. There's a full breakdown there which features, obviously, the main man, Michael Bisping. But, geez, man, I can't wait to watch fights with a full arena. I know we've had a little bit of a tickle, haven't we? We've had a little bit of a tickle where we've had you had sprinklings of fans in there.
What was Fight Island with Conor and Dustin? About 2,500, something like that?
Yeah. But, I mean, and don't get me wrong, they made some noise, man. They made some din in there.
Yeah.
But 15,000 in an enclosed arena as well, not an open air thing, enclosed arena. Boom, man. The Ric Flair woos are going to be out in full force, aren't they? It's going to be mega.
It's going to be awesome. And obviously, in typical fashion, the UFC have gone and delivered with three belt and title fights as well. You know, it's hard to pick which one I'm looking forward to most. You know, I'll be honest, it's probably Wiley versus Rose is probably the one that jumps off the page most.
As a fight?
Just because I think, as a fight, yeah. I just think it's so fucking competitive. I really fancy Rose to win back the title. But Wiley is a complete and utter monster. The main event, as boss as it is, You know, you've got Kamaru Usman in one corner, who's got all the hallmarks of a superstar, but yet to really pull the trigger. And in the other opposite corner, you've got an actual superstar that it may well have just came a little bit too late for him. And that's what makes that fight so intriguing. I can't wait to see Jorge Masvidal after a full camp against Kamaru Usman to see if he can do something different. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, Kamaru Usman beat this guy in third gear last time. And the only way he loses for me is if he tries to box with a boxer.
Mate, listen, that's not what the Fight Disciples are all about. The Fight Disciples are all about daring to dream. That's what we're all about here, mate. We're all about the fairy tale. Right. Yes, there's a more sensible narrative to obviously take, and we will take that in a moment or two, but let's just live the dream for a second, yeah? Think about it if he does it. We're in Florida, man. We're in Florida. This is his gaff. This is Masvidal's gaff. Now, don't tell me that it's Usman's gaff. He's from Nebraska, right? This is his gaff. This is Masvidal's gaff. He's had one unbelievable career. A guy that grew up street fighting in the backyards, mate, yeah? He's been there, done that. He's been the Neely man for a long period of time in the UFC. Jorge Masvidal was the king of the split decision. And he wasn't on the right end of those split decisions. He was constantly getting beat and losing out on those split decisions. He lost to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and he went on that sabbatical to the reality TV show, living in the jungle, trying to find himself, thinking, right, what am I all about here, man? Am I going to do anything? And we're talking about a guy that's in the, I won't say twilight of his career, but he's not a spring chicken anymore. He's our boy, getting bred. Now, he's come back. He starched Darren Till in London. He starched Ben Askren. He's put on a display against Nate Diaz, and he became our fighter of the year that particular year. And of course, he ran into Kamaru Usman last minute notice, though. 6 days! Mm-hmm. 6 days, he sticks his hands up and he says, go on, get me over there. I'll go and do the business on Fight Island. Flies across the world, and yeah, he came up short. First round, you think to yourself, go on! And then round 2, 3, 4, and 5 was all Usman. Of course it was. Now, as you've said, he's had a full camp. He's fully conditioned. He's been living with this dude in his head for a long, long period of time. Let's dare to be great, man. Let's dare to dream. Let's believe that the fairy tale is going to happen, that Jorge Masvidal is going to become the champion, the UFC welterweight champion. Given from where he was to where he is right now, mate, this is right up there with some of the best narratives that the UFC have churned out of recent times. The Michael Bisping narrative, the Francis Ngannou narrative, Jorge Masvidal narrative could be something very special at the weekend.
I think the thing with Masvidal, similar to Bisping, is that it really ticks the box with fans that have been watching UFC and mixed martial arts for a couple of decades. You know, guys that have been around, paid the dues. The Ngannou one is just incredible as a life journey. That's a Hollywood movie because of what he had to go through in his life to realise his ambitions and his dreams. But for a long time, they were just complete and utter pipe dreams. Jorge Masvidal has been a fighter his entire life. It's almost an inevitability that he gets to this point. But there was certain times in his career where you think he's an also-ran, he's a nearly man. You know, I was there at Team Carbon on the mats when Till took the call and he got offered Masvidal, and they couldn't say yes quick enough because he's a name, he's been around a long time. But in a lot of ways, he was at that point in time a layup opponent to solidify yourself as in Till's case, a revitalized world title shot. So to have the turnaround that he's had, to be able to go away and have that crisis of thought where you go, what the fuck am I doing here? Why am I helping other people advance their lives? Why am I just turning up and losing these decisions? I'm going to start starching people. I'm going to start, as he said, baptizing motherfuckers and getting them out of there. And that's exactly what he's done. And 2019 belonged to Jorge Masvidal. He became a superstar. He went from being a cult hero, an underground kind of fan's favorite. It's like when the Red Hot Chili Peppers released Californication. It went from being like a small, hall, fucking beloved band to this super group, you know, fucking bigger than U2 or whatever. And that's what Masvidal did in 2019. He unlocked this potential and suddenly everyone was on board. This guy's a superstar. He's a pay-per-view superstar. And his status as a pay-per-view superstar for the UFC is why he's got this return fight. you know, on paper, he shouldn't be fighting Usman again now. You know, he's done nothing in the 9 months that they've had removed or whatever it is from their first fight. Meanwhile, Usman's been away and beat other people, and there's other contenders that are lining up that probably deserve it more. You know, when you look at the actual fight itself, I would rather see Colby Covington part two than Jorge Masvidal part two. The difference is Masvidal brings a narrative that the UFC can heavily sell. And if he can win at the weekend, then it's an uphill battle. But if he can, it may well be the most incredible story in the history of the UFC, which is littered with incredible Hollywood stories. Mm. It's fucking right up there, man. You're absolutely right. His journey in the sport of mixed martial arts charts the history of mixed martial arts, and his relentlessness and his attitude and his ability to reinvent himself. If he was to win that belt at the weekend, Jesus Christ, man. Talk about superstars, absolute superstar, and Hollywood will beckon.
What an opportunity as well for Kamaru Usman, because let's not forget, Usman, his best performance for me was his last performance against Gilbert Burns. I thought he was brilliant.
Yes.
Outstanding. And he suffered adversity in that fight as well. He got clipped early doors, went down heavy, got off his arse and sorted that fight out brilliantly. He called for this fight. He understands the value of where Jorge Masvidal is at. He understands that he's the money in the division. And now what I think he's doing is, off the back of the first fight, he's gone, I've won that fight quite easy. And he did. Listen, let's not take anything away from him. He did win that fight. It wasn't attractive. It wasn't sexy. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody's going back and watching it back again, are they? Nobody's using clips from that fight again to promote this fight. They're just not doing it. But what he's obviously understood is, off the back of a great performance against Gilbert Burns and the love that he's getting for that type of performance and fight, the love that he got for the performance that he put in against Colby Covington, because that was a sensational fight in itself, and the value that he understands Jorge Masvidal is at, you are going to see something, I think, different from Kamaru Usman. He's not going to come in and wrestle hump again. I don't think he is going to do that. Because why ask for the fight? He's asking for the fight to take his star to the next level. He's using the momentum and the gravitas of what Masvidal is in order to boost his own thing. And obviously get paid as well. He's getting paid an awful lot more money, no doubt, off the pay-per-view points. So yeah. I fully expect Kamaru Usman to attempt to finish him. I really do. I don't think he's going to try and hump him. I think he's going to try and fight the guy.
I think he's got him. I think he's got to get a finish now. He's got to improve on his last performance. And his last performance was dominant but boring. People were turning off in their droves. You know, I was highly critical of him. Not
the Masvidal
only on TV,
fight.
But
the Masvidal fight.
Yeah, the Masvidal fight. Not Burns, of course. No. The Masvidal fight, the last performance against Burns. I mean, Masvidal, I mean. You know, I was highly critical of him on here, but also on TV as well. I was like, man, he fucking bored me to death, and he missed an opportunity to take away Masvidal's 2019 star power and go, yeah, you think that guy's good? Boom. Just smashed him to bits. Boom. I'm the guy. He did that against Gilbert Burns. But it's easy to do it against the guy that you shared many rounds sparring with. And you know, in the back of your mind, I can beat this guy in this way, in this way. To do it against Masvidal, to tool up Masvidal, to outblast Masvidal would be a massive statement. But I believe that, you know, working with the corner team he's got now, wanting to develop, wanting to prove something, wanting to prove that he's moved on from the 5-round decision that he got last time, is imperative if you're in the Kamaru Usman business. It's not good enough for him to hold Masvidal up against the fence for 5 rounds again. He can't do it this time. He has to improve on that. And in doing so, I think that's where there might be a small opportunity where Masvidal might be able to catch him and might be able to make inroads.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's what makes it fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. If you're listening to this and you're thinking these lads are off the tits, if we're betting, if you're asking me to put dough down on this right now, I'm betting on Usman. Of course I'm betting on Usman, right? That's where the sensible bet is at. But this is mixed martial arts. I've been here before. If I was making a sensible bet when Rockhold and Michael Bisping were fighting each other on 10 days notice, I went with Rockhold, even though my heart was praying that Bisping can land the left hook Larry. Did he land it? Yes, he did. And we've got one of the greatest stories of all time. So who knows what's going to happen at the weekend? You would, if you're a betting person, you're probably going with Usman, and you're right to do that correctly. But this is game bread, man. Let's see what happens. You're right to pick out the strawweight clash. as the fight of the night. Not only is it technically brilliant between Wiley and Rose Namajunas, former champ against current champ, just two brilliant fighters, brilliant. But for some reason, it's got political. The whole conversation has got political.
It's crazy,
it has. It's gone absolutely mad. Now I've said this on the TV this week. I understand where Rose is coming from because obviously there's a lot of personal hurt there from what her grandparents suffered in Lithuania at the hands of communism. I completely get where she's coming from. But what I don't understand and what you can't do, especially in the current climate, what you can't do is just tar everybody with the same brush.
Yeah.
Wiley is not communism. Zhang Weili is Zhang Weili. That's what she is. She ain't the Chinese government. She ain't the poster girl for communism. That's not what she is. She's an elite level mixed martial artist. That's what you're fighting. So for Rose to kind of personify Weili as communism and say it publicly that she's using that as her driving force, I think is a very dangerous place to be. Really dangerous narrative to be throwing around the fight itself, because we're experiencing a lot of weird things in the world right now, aren't we? Where there's a lot of hate crimes going on. There's a lot of people that are persecuting people and being horrible and nasty towards people that are different than them, you know? And I think sports stars have a duty, have an obligation to be aware of that. And you might have your own political beliefs, you might have your own personal journey, your own personal thought processes, but you need to be aware of the words that you are using and how they will affect others. If other people say, well, the girl from the UFC is saying this, must be all right for me to be able to do that. It's not, man. It's not at all. And I think it's dangerous when you politicize sport.
Yeah, very dangerous. And listen, I get it, man. I get the fact that she feels like she's got a personal reason to attack communism. That's all good and well, but pointing that towards Wiley just felt wrong. And but unfortunately, that's it's kind of America, isn't it? Everything's political over there, man. Everything's to do with race and equality and everything. It's just a complete and utter fucking mess. And I just thought, I'm just surprised Rose went that way with it and sort of made it such a bigger conversation. I don't understand what she gets out of it. I don't understand whether she thinks it's going to motivate it. All it's going to do is make people switch off from Rose Namajunas. I think more people now are going to go, I hope she gets beat, an idiot. And I think it's going to motivate Zhang Weili to be like, well, fuck you. How dare you? You don't know me. Yeah. You've never spoke to me. You don't know what Wiley's opinions are on
the
climate. She might be completely opposed to it. I don't know. But more than anything, whenever you mix politics and sports, shit very rarely goes well. Very rarely. So, yeah, man, I'm disappointed on a personal note because I'm a huge fan of Rose Namajunas. I think she's the best strawweight in the world. She's got an incredible backstory. You know, never mind her grandparents. She herself came through some horrific hardships when she was a child. You know, she's spoken many times about how she was abused and everything else. So, for her to suddenly become this like political bully kind of didn't sit right with me and didn't sit right with who I thought that Rose Namajunas was. So it's changed my aspect in the way I look at her. I just want it to be about the fighting again. You know, hopefully we can completely curb that narrative forever by these girls throwing up another Fight of the Year contender. And I truly believe this has got the hallmarks of being a Fight of the Year contender as well.
Yeah, because I think out of all the fights, the title fights in particular, this is the one that is the most difficult
most
to pick a winner. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
You've gone one way, I've gone the other, and well, I think we're both on the same side with the other two fights. And do you know something? You made a great point in the TV show when we were talking about this fight and the way that you have come to the conclusion that you believe that Rose Namajunas will win this fight because you've compared the performances that Rose did against Joanna and then Wiley's fight against Joanna. And it's right. Maybe I should have done that. Maybe I should have looked at it and gone, well, Rose Namajunas, first of all, she starts, she's Joanna, first time out. And then second time puts on a clinic against Joanna. Joanna couldn't get nearer in the second fight. And the fight with Weili and Joanna, fucking hell, man. That was like, life and death, weren't it? You know what I mean? God knows where how they both came out of that unscathed. Did she? She hasn't been back in the octagon since. We haven't seen her since.
Exactly.
So we don't know. We don't know where she's at. I will still favour Wiley just because she's obviously as athletic, she's as technical. I think she's stronger. That's the only thing I'm holding on to. I think she's just a stronger girl than Rose Namajunas. But Namajunas, she's like a sniper. That's the best way to describe her. Yes. Isn't she? She don't waste anything, man. She when she throws it, it lands. So, mate, it's going to be a great fight.
I agree with you with strength and power. Definitely, I'd say Wiley all day. You know, she would out sprint her, out bench her, probably out muscle her. You know, and but I think technically, Rose Namajunas is a better fighter. I think technically she is better. She didn't need to go to war with Joanna in the second fight like Wiley had to do. That became a war of attrition. Who wants it more? And fuck me, they both wanted it. Like their lives depended on it. And that's why we got a fight of the year. Rose Namajunas won't do that because she doesn't need to do that. She is technically enough to outstrike Wiley. And I think Wiley is only champion because of Rose Namajunas and that freak slam knockout against Andrade when Rose had completely tooled her up for a round and then suddenly she got picked up, slammed, got knocked out. She lost her belt. Andrade goes and fights Wiley in China, loses the belt straight away. I think it's just come back round against the two best strawweights on the planet. There's so many ways it could play out. I personally think Rose will win and will win convincingly and look good doing it. But you're right, man. If Wiley can get close enough and she can start busting it up, then Jesus Christ, I don't think Rose Namajunas has got the kind of chin that Joanna's got, and she can't go to war with Wiley for 25 minutes. She's not physically strong enough. But if she can stay on her A game, she can stay on the outside, she can pick her off, I think she could make Wiley look a little bit novice-y.
Shevchenko, high kick at the weekend. How's it playing out?
Oh. My girl, talking about my girl.
Listen, it fell. Schedules fell last week, right, where I couldn't do an interview with Valentina Shevchenko. So who gets the call? And then for, what is it, 20 minutes, you just asked her out on a date, didn't you? That's all you did.
I did.
That's all you did.
I'm begging my wife doesn't see this interview, you know, because I think BT Sport have put it up today, or it's going up today, of me basically spending 15, 20 minutes asking Valentina Shevchenko if she's ready to settle down. Does she want to start a family? You know, is there any man in her life right now? Would she like a man in her life right now? Like, that was literally the focus. Did it talk about Jessica Andrade? No. Did it talk about potentially fighting Amanda Nunes for about 5 seconds? But even that was like, Amanda Nunes has started a family. Do you want to start a family? Like, it was the most obvious pitch ever. It was unbelievable. And I'll be honest, you know, there was a few it wasn't just going one way. Let's say that. The sparks weren't just going one way. I could feel them coming back at me as well.
Mate.
Me and Jesus. Valentina, I tell you what, you never know.
Jesus Christ, mate.
By the way, I'm super happily married. Obviously, I'm joking here, but there was sparks.
Do you give Andrade much hope? I mean, this is a girl that has fought at 135. She's gone down to 115. And as you've just said there, she became the champ. She won the belt at 115. I thought that she wasn't big enough for 135. It's like that. It's like Goldilocks and Three Bears, isn't it? You know what I mean? This one's too small, too big. Is she just right at 125? Last time out against Chukagian, she looked really good, man. She's got the power. Has she got enough of a skill set to trick Shevchenko into doing something that she doesn't want to do, and then she could take advantage of it?
Yeah, and you're right. That's exactly how her opportunity is going to come. She needs something like she did against Rose Namajunas. She needs to get a big power slam in there. She needs to have this opportunity kind of out of nowhere, because I think technically across the board, Valentina's better than her. She's a better ground fighter than her. She's more aggressive on the ground. Striking is obviously, you know, I think Valentina Shevchenko has probably got the best all-round mixed martial arts striking in the entire women's sport. Amanda Nunes probably got better boxing, But I think the size advantage is what makes Amanda Nunes.
I love how high you are. Right, you've got a woman that holds two belts in two weight categories, right? She smokes everybody, but nah. Shevchenko's better.
What size? Listen, a good big un will always beat a good little un. But what I'm saying here is the good little un is technically better than the good big un. That's just a fact.
No. That's a fact in your head. That's what you believe.
I think success-wise, I think belts-wise, that's why we consider Amanda Nunes the GOAT. And she's adorable. She's a wonderful poster girl for the sport and the UFC. But when you get down to it, mate, nobody is better than the Bullets. She is the full ticket, man.
Okay.
She has got everything. She's got a great...
So Amanda Nunes has beat her twice, mate.
Yeah, but it's a size thing. It is what it is, man. A good big and beats a good little one. She can't do nothing about that. It's physical attributes. I'll tell you what, though, if there was a third fight, I'd be all over Shevchenko, baby. I'm talking boxing now, MMA now. I'm not talking about, anything outside of that, obviously. But she's the best. Tune in this weekend to see the best female fighter in the sport today retaining her title. That's all I'm going to say. And if you want, if Andrej's out of there quick, have we got any more flyweights on this card? Because she could run through them all like a dose of salt.
Three world title fights on UFC 261 in front of the fans in Florida. Should be an absolute cracker. Main card's good, man. Main card's good. It's going to be interesting to see where Uriah Hall's at, innit? Because he's a dude that has flattered to deceive a lot. He's got a hell of a fight this weekend, an opportunity for him to kind of make a little bit of a statement, because if he comes through this, then you would think that his ranking would be a little bit higher come Tuesday morning. And with the flux that is in this middleweight division, of course, we've just been speaking about Robert Whittaker. He's the guy. So Robert Whittaker fights Israel Adesanya, that's the guy. But everything else, there's people losing, there's people injured, there's people all over the place. Uriah Hall is in the mix with those guys if he wins at the weekend.
Yes. And I think Uriah Hall or Weidman, there's big name opponents out there that would be tempted by either of these guys. Uriah Hall, as talented as he can look, he also looks like a guy that doesn't want to be there. He's not a natural born fighter. And when it comes down to biting down on the gum shield, he's not a guy that's known for doing that. And likewise, Chris Weidman, for his incredible run as champion, it was also brief. I mean, he's certainly got holes in his game, as his recent run of fights suggest, even though he's only lost against real top-level opposition. So whoever comes out of this is attractive in one way because they're a name, but two, because they're ranked in the top 10 and they're beatable, if you like. So coming out of this fight and calling for the right name, whether that's a Vettori, whether that's even Till, who's still a bigger name than Vettori, one of these guys, the winner needs to have a name on their lips, a strategic name that they know. If one of these guys calls out Till, they could well get a Till fight, put it that way. Mm. Likewise, Vettori, likewise, returning Cannonier, and suddenly they're back in the top five again. Mm. So I think it's hugely, I think the losers in dire straits at this stage in his career, in terms of aspirations to one day becoming champion or champion again. But I think the winner is in a real cool position, man. A real cool position.
It's an interesting one as well, kicking off that main card, isn't it? Jimmy Crute, everybody's high on him from down under. Taking on Anthony Smith, a guy that we were all high on once upon a time. It's not gone well for him of recent times. Like I said again on the TV show, it feels like that... you get him every now and again, don't you, where the UFC are kind of... We want to showcase this new talent. So how do we showcase that new talent? I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll get a guy that's been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Maybe it's on the slide just a touch, but he's still a solid enough name for us to be able to then push the new kid forward. A gatekeeper fight. That's what it feels like. And hopefully Anthony Smith has looked at that and gone, fuck that shit. Give me the new kid, man. I'll smoke him. Hopefully.
Yeah, and you know what? It's like... We see it all the time. We've seen it last weekend. We've seen it on Saturday night with Andre Arlovsky and Chase Sherman.
Co-main
event it was promoted to. Hey, Andre, you want to take on this young guy on this 5 or 6 fight unbeaten run? Yeah, man, I'll do it. And then Andre Arlovsky turns up and Chase Sherman gets caught out. Look at Andre Arlovsky's previous fight. They did exactly the same thing against Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall takes full opportunity, steamroller former champion, makes his star brighter. That's just basically how the sport works. Jimmy Coote has got a wonderful opportunity here to take on a former title contender on a big main card, big pay-per-view, and really put himself on the map with a global audience as a future contender at 205. But Anthony Smith accepted this fight a couple of weeks ago. It was supposed to be Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Johnny Walker pulled out injured. So Anthony Smith has basically gone, yeah, man, give us that. So beware. And obviously, listen, if you're Jimmy Crusoe, even better. You're not fighting the guy who's ranked number 8 now. You're fighting the guy who's ranked number 5 or 6. So it's better for Jimmy Crusoe or Jimmy Crusoe. But also be wary of the fact that Anthony Smith was the guy that went, yep, go ahead. I'll do him. I'll do that young guy. I'll fucking bump, jump all over him. So I think, to be honest, as much as I think Wiley Namajunas is going to be a fight of the year contender, I think if any fight on this card competes with it, it'll be this Anthony Smith, Jimmy Crute, because one guy is fighting to stay relevant and one guy is fighting to prove that he's on his way to a title shot. And that always means you're going to get absolute fireworks.
Both well-rounded as well. They can both do it everywhere. So yeah, should be
one's
good.
A veteran, one's had about 50 odd fights, and the other one's a young kid that grew up as a mixed martial artist. Jimmy Crute has been a mixed martial artist since he started training. You know, he didn't start in kickboxing or whatever. He's done MMA, so he's fully rounded. He's been sculpted that way. Anthony Smith has been around forever, fought on every big promotion, 50 odd fight veteran, as you say. It's a belter. It's a brilliant fight. And you know what? Toss a coin. Genuinely, toss a coin.
It's a good one, man. 261's a good one. Prelims are 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock for that main card. And, of course, anything with Masvidal involved in, it's just got to be well worth staying up.
And, of course, fuck me. Before you... Don't miss the Shagger as well. Shagger's on here. Shagger Oliveira. Shagger! 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 We love Cowboy Oliveira. He's basically the UFC's version of Mighty Mohawker. Got fucking kids all over the place. How many kids has he got now?
13, isn't it?
To about at least 10 different women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All over Brazil. He's an absolute monster. Former bull rider turned UFC fighter. Always fun. Shagger! Shagger! He's back. Saturday night. Can't wait.
That's not his nickname. His nickname's Cowboy. But yeah, Shagger Oliveira would be a far better nickname. Yeah, listen, it should be a cracker. 1 o'clock then prelims, 3 o'clock in the morning is your main card, all on BT Sport. Go and get yourself stuck into it, and we'll have weigh-in shows and prelims and post-fight shows and all that type of stuff available for you, courtesy of the lovely fellas at BT Sport. So make sure you go and get stuck into it. Thank you very much for listening to us. We are available on YouTube. Go and have a little bit of a nosy for us, Fight Disciples, and we're all over iTunes, Fight Disciples. And our website is fightdisciples.com. Go and get stuck in. Keep an eye out for new merchandise coming your way, which Nicholas has designed, and it is ready to rock and roll near enough, yeah? You're in production at the moment, aren't you?
It's actually in production. We do have needle and cotton getting weaved together as we speak.
Nice. So, there you go, for your summer. When you're out of lockdown, you'll be in them boozers, fully kitted up as a Fight Disciple. So there you go. Thank you very much for listening to us. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.